This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sunday morning live on Sports Radio 90 Time the Game, 9:21 in the morning. Again, taking you to 11, super short show today. And coverage of the NCAA tournament, final day of the round of 32, where at least eight of the teams playing today are former national champions. And it will kick off with the two-time defending champion UConn Huskies and another school that's not too recent past, won back-to-back titles. In the Florida Gators, and that'll be followed by Baylor and Duke, and two players in the nation head-to-head. And then we'll take you on the station to Hawks and 76ers tonight, 5:30 coverage from State Farm Arena, 6 o'clock tip if you want to go see the Hawks after that big win over Golden State last night. All right, let's welcome into the program our basketball expert, college basketball expert, Deshaun Tate, who joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Talk a little bit about what happened yesterday and today. Deshaun, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me, John.
So, Deshaun, there are some people who are, because, you know, fans like to complain and fans like to point fingers and things of that nature, who are complaining that they think that this tournament, because of the impact, and as I mentioned in the opening segment, it was bound to happen that the expansions of the Big Ten and SEC and the, you know, the powerhouse nature of those two leagues in running, because they run college sports at the moment, that it was bound to happen that they were going to, you know, bleed into other sports, and it's bled into, you know, basketball in a big way this year. And a lot of people are saying with, you know, 14 teams in the SEC getting in, and then, you know, 16 of the 32 being from those two leagues, that this is, you know, no Cinderella's, that this is dull. Do you agree that it's dull?
No, not at all. I was almost going to ask you if that was a trick question. Of course not. Listen, you got some good college basketball, and I know I think maybe some people are probably disappointed that you probably don't have the Cinderellas that you used to have and so forth. Obviously, Colorado State can still make that case for themselves today in a game against Maryland, but obviously, you know, you did have some upsets along the way. It's just not your typical upsets. Like, sure, you have McNeese State, but, you know, with I guess you can call it, was it Arkansas's win over number two seeded Rick Pitino and St. John's. Is that an upset? I guess technically yes, but when you start looking at the fact that where Arkansas was at coming into the season with all the high expectations, then probably not. But, I mean, listen, it hasn't been the buzzer beaters, of course, that we tend to, you know, expect. Some of the games have been blowouts and so forth. But what side of the fence do you live on is ultimately the question. Is it that side where you like to see the most, you know, you expect for this to be the most unpredictable time of the year and things of that nature? Or do you want to see the best teams play up against the best teams? And we still have a lot. We saw all the number one seeds playing, all the number two seeds except for one playing. A lot of these high, you know, seeded teams are still playing in this tournament. So ultimately, I just really think it depends on what side of the fence that you live on ultimately.
Yeah, well, really nice win for Houston. Gonzaga made a really good run. That was a really good game yesterday for Kelvin Sampson in Houston to win. Auburn holds off Creighton, and that was, you know, Creighton, you know, pretty Creighton a feisty team, and Auburn, you know, needed that kind of win. And then late last night, in case you missed it, Tennessee held off UCLA and Mick Cronin. And so for Auburn and Tennessee, now they're in. Auburn, Arkansas, Tennessee are into the Sweet 16. And, you know, the SEC, for all of people complaining, Deshaun, has a chance today with Kentucky and Alabama and Ole Miss, Florida, to really kind of, you know, make a statement here. Because here's my question. I know I'm long-winded here. Half of the 14 SEC teams are out. And yet what we're getting is a lot of people saying the SEC has failed. I'm like, well, how do you determine failure? If two or three of the final four teams are from the SEC, or if the national title game is SEC against SEC, that's not a fail, is it?
No, of course not. Of course it's not a fail. I mean, in some of these games, ultimately is just inevitably teams are going to have to play up against teams at some point in time, which means, I mean, someone's going to have to be eliminated at some point. That's just the way that it goes. I don't know if it's law of averages per se or whatever, what have you, but it's just the way that it is. And I mean, listen, there's a reason for that. They got so many teams in, but the teams, I'm always going to be the person that lives on this side of the fence. That is, the teams that are supposed to be there are the teams that are going to be there. The teams that are, you know, work harder are the teams that are going to be there. The teams that play better are the teams that are going to be there. I don't care what conference they're representing or what have you. Who's meant to be there is going to be there in the end. Don't worry about, you know, the matchups and so forth. The best brand, whoever's playing the best brand of basketball and getting hot at the right time are the teams that are going to be there playing in the end. So sometimes I think we have to appreciate, you know, the basketball that's played in front of us and embrace, you know, whoever is in the tournament at that point, because regardless of the conference, I still believe you're going to see the best teams playing up against each other when San Antonio rolls around next weekend.
All right, so to that point, I'm going to break this down, what happened yesterday. We're talking with Deshaun Tate. He's at Tate's Take Hoops. He is our college basketball expert. And we're looking back to yesterday, and then we're going to break down in the next segment, we're going to break down the games today. So you're right. I mean, it's about peaking at the right time. And that's true of Cinderella's, by the way. That's why you would get the Wichita States or the George Masons, the Loyolas, the VCUs, making runs into the Final Four because they were peaking at the right time. So let's go to the SEC. You mentioned Arkansas. Let's talk about those three SEC teams. Auburn with its win over Creighton, Tennessee with its win over UCLA. Auburn or Tennessee or both or neither, are they starting to play their best basketball, or are they still seeking to play their best basketball?
I still think that they're seeking to a degree. I mean, Auburn have been so strong all year long, and I mean, you got to give them some credit considering the fact that they've had the target on their back for quite some time throughout the duration of the season and still able to come away with wins. I mean, listen, we saw Auburn in the first half not play a really good brand in their first round matchup against Alabama State. And the first game is always going to be tough, probably the toughest in this tournament. Any coach can tell you that. But we talk about the matchup that Houston had and how difficult that we knew that would be playing up against the Gonzaga team. How about the job that Creighton had did against Auburn? I mean, Creighton's not a pushover. That's a team that also is not only just experienced, but in addition to that, returning some major pieces and contributing players from last year's team that went to the Elite Eight. And, of course, Auburn doing what they're supposed to do, finding a way to win. Don't forget, they got freshmen on their team that, you know, are major contributing factors without NCAA tournament experience that is assisting them in going to the second weekend. Then when you start looking at a team like a Tennessee who does tend to sometimes struggle to score, that's kind of Rick Barnes' Tennessee motto and just the type of team that they are. They're really going to, you know, kind of muck it up and try to gut out a lot of those wins. They play up against a very defensive-minded UCLA team. So I understand where maybe not just the style of play necessarily is kind of underwhelming, but the matchup a little bit is underwhelming. But that was also against a Big Ten team where we know how good the Big Ten had been in the NCAA tournament so far already this year. And not just that, but one of the better defensive teams in the country being the UCLA Bruins. And then, you know, of course, the fact that UCLA was a top four seed in the Big Ten this year as well. So, I mean, listen, they've got their work cut out. Every game is going to get tougher and tougher. And Tennessee's sitting back right now, advancing to the next round, going on, you know, to a different region in the Midwest, going on to Indianapolis, and awaiting the winner of Illinois and Kentucky. Two teams that I think are really good and going to give Tennessee all that they can handle. You deserve to be there. Tennessee will be waiting for whomever that is. And I anticipate it being a really good game, not just that one, but all of the Sweet 16 matchups.
Yeah, mixed bag for the Big Ten yesterday. Purdue and Michigan win, Wisconsin and UCLA lose. I don't know how much that's on Wisconsin. We talk about teams that are starting to peak at the right time and teams that some fans don't know about. This BYU team, they're pretty darn good, Deshaun.
No, BYU is. And listen, BYU could score a ton of points too, by the way. I mean, they hung 91 on a Wisconsin team that's predicated and known for its ability to play defense. And you know, they've got a guy coming in next year, which I think they're kind of prepping things for. A.J. DeBanso is the number one player in the country on next year. So they're really kind of still building and establishing the culture that they really want to put forth for their program. And I know that I'm going to butcher the name, so please forgive me. But they've also got a guy who we anticipate from Moscow, a Russian, Igor Demon, who is expected to be a lottery pick in, you know, this upcoming June's NBA draft. And they're just a team that can score a lot of offense. Now, probably can't, you know, stop a nosebleed, probably can't cover anybody, can't cover the baby with a blanket during nap time or anything like that. But it's all about surviving in advance. You win the games, you advance. That's something that BYU has been able to do. And it will be really interesting after we find out today here in Cleveland. I'll be at the game. 7 seed is St. Mary's, number 2 Alabama. If Alabama is able to win, you like offense. I know everybody said, oh, well, you know, sometimes it's a stinker in college basketball. It's not enough offense. There's so much, you know, defense and low-scoring games, particularly in the Big Ten. If Alabama finds a way to advance and beat St. Mary's and win this game, they're playing next weekend against BYU, two of the top-scoring teams in college basketball. That should make it. If you love basketball, you love offense, you love high-scoring, high-octane, high-volume shooting and all those other things, that'll make for a good matchup. But Alabama still has work to do to get to that point.
Round of 32, live coverage begins in about 90 minutes right here on Sports Radio 90.10 The Game. UConn, Florida, Baylor, Duke in a doubleheader, and then we'll go off to the Hawks. We want to get into a little bit of today's games with Deshaun, so he's going to stick around on the segment. In the last couple of minutes of this segment, though, I do want to go because the Hawks are playing the 76ers tonight. Nice win last night by the Hawks. They are a game and a half ahead of Orlando, Deshaun, with 12 games to go and how important that seventh seed is. Are you of the impression now? I mean, this is enjoyable. This is going to be what it is this year, but it's pretty obvious that to me, and I'm just kind of interested to see if you think so as well. The Kyle Korver's had a lot of influence in the front office because this team is starting to resemble a lot more kind of the building blocks of the 60 win team that Korver was a part of. Which is to say a team that, even though it has a Trae Young, was more a kind of a unit team that played together basketball, and you're starting to see that, and you kind of get an expectation with the return to Jalen Johnson next year that this core of five wants to play together for a while, and that's how they're going to be, you know, not breaking it up and going and getting pieces. You're just going to take a core of five and let them grow together.
It appears that way in some instances. I don't think necessarily all, but I think the fact that, you know, you're relying on so many pieces to be good for you this year that are, you know, in either in the Hawks uniform for the very first time or, in, you know, first-time situation as starters. Take somebody like Onyeka Okongwu, who I think, and I'd be the person that, you know, awkwardly enough standing, you know, raising my hand up in the air to say that I wasn't sure if Onyeka Okongwu could be the guy that's ready for a starting position. And it had been kind of underwhelming even when he gets in there at the backup five. Now you see him as a starting center, the double-double machine that he has turned out to be. And, you know, Dyson Daniels, everybody talks about how good of a job he's done on the defensive end. How about on the offensive end? He's, what, 4 assists away from a triple-double, so you got to give some credit there. Zachary Risache, who I think has felt a little bit of been up under a little bit of pressure to a degree, making sure that he's the guy that's standing in the in the spot ready to contribute a little bit more, considering you don't have someone like a Jalen Johnson because he has been out. George's knee ain't kind of being that step-in piece of what you got during without Bogey Bogdanovich as the guy coming off the bench and being the shooter and taking on some of the load of that. Caris LeVert, who's averaging 16 points a game. We always gave so much credit, forgive me for being long-winded because I know we're up against it, but we always give so much credit to DeAndre Hunter finally coming around. Everybody thought that that was a terrible move. He's averaging 20 points a game. What is Caris LeVert doing since he's been there as an Atlanta Hawk? Averaging, what, just 16 points a game, only four away from what DeAndre was giving off the bench. So it's going to take some time, of course. At some point, we do have to have conversations about them addressing potentially the backup center position and the backup point guard position, but there's still time to do that.
Yeah, we're talking about backups. That's my point. That's exactly what they're going to be doing in the offseason. So we're talking with Deshaun Tate. He is our college basketball, our basketball expert, somebody that I've leaned on for, gosh, Deshaun, how long, how many years have you and I talked tournament? A decade?
Man, I think we're now at this point, certainly I think it's over a decade now at this point. I started at the station in, 2013, so we're certainly working on probably our 13th year, maybe, somewhere right around that range.
So let's talk about the games today. Let's begin at the noon tip-off, the early tip-off. Two of the last 25 years in your list of top five programs the last 25 years, they probably both fall into those. UConn arguably number one. Well, not argue. I don't think there's any argument that UConn is the number one program over the last 25 years. And when you win that many national titles, you're going for three in a row, and you've done it with three different head coaches. That's impressive. And Florida, of course, aiming for its fourth, I think it's fourth title game, and its third title in the last 25 years. So a lot going on here with both these teams, UConn and Florida. Interesting matchup. How do you see this game going?
Yeah, I think, you know, we kept talking about the number one seeds getting tested on yesterday between Auburn and Houston, and now Florida's going to get their chance. And listen, I mean, sure, UConn is not the same team that, you know, we're used to or accustomed to seeing, especially over the course of the last couple of years. Obviously, the roster has kind of changed or flipped, and, you know, the talent kind of recycles to a degree. But this isn't a UConn team that I'm, you know, counting out by any means. I mean, listen, people were counting out Arkansas not too long ago, too. And you see them come away with a big-time win. I mean, sometimes it takes time, you know, development and growth for teams that are, you know, different from what they had been the last couple of years, and that's something that we're seeing out of this UConn team. But it's about, like we said before in the last segment, playing basketball at the right brand of basketball at the right time, and that is the Connecticut Huskies. By the way, when you start factoring in the number one team in the country in terms of blocks, you know, I think that, you know, the size up front, obviously bringing back somebody with the experience from the last couple of years, Alex Carabane, is going to help contribute to that. I do anticipate that Florida will walk away with being able to win this basketball game. I think it's just a lot of scoring, one of the better rebounding teams in the country as well. I mean, Florida's they're a really good team, but that's certainly going to be tested on today. I like Florida to advance, but, man, if there's a number one seed that's going to go down on today, I would imagine that they would be the one in this particular game.
At 240, Baylor and Duke, we could have the top two picks in the NBA draft head-to-head here. Cooper Flagg of Duke, everybody, most fans, even casuals, know about. They may not know about VJ Edgecombe of Baylor. He is kind of a new version of Victor Oladipo. I mean, he's a wing, but, boy, he's athletic. He plays defense. He's all over the place. I love him as a player. This is going to be interesting to see these two head-to-head.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And VJ Edgecombe is probably one of those names of which I believe is maybe not as highly touted, obviously, as Cooper Flagg or what have you. I mean, he's a freak athlete. I think anybody can see that when you watch him play. But I will also say enough to say that, you know, we are talking about a department where if this game comes down to being about, you know, experience on the sidelines, it comes down to a coaching matchup, that is kind of where you have to give the edge to Coach Drew. And, I mean, they've got other guys that have got experience in the NCAA tournament, too, talking about the Baylor Bears. Norshad Omir, who was formerly at, you know, Miami when they made their run a couple of years ago to the Final Four, was on that roster and was a big contributing piece to that team. How about the former Duke point guard and Jeremy Roach now playing the point guard spot for Baylor now, going up against, you know, some guys from his old team. So I'm sure that makes it for a very interesting storyline as well. I like Duke to definitely come away with a win on this one and advance to the Sweet 16, but I don't think it's going to come easy. Unfortunately, Baylor just not nearly as good this year as they had been in recent history.
Yeah, well, when you got Flag and Canupo, I mean, well, that, but then again, you know, having two top 10 picks, I mean, Rutgers is going to have to top. To look at Rutgers.
That is true.
Harper and
that
Bailey, I mean, they're nowhere to be found. All right, so 5-15, Illinois and Kentucky. Both these teams, good but not great versions of themselves.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, if we're talking about a team that's remaining left in this tournament that can – you know, that is kind of bipolar to a degree. That's probably the Illinois Fighting Illini. They've got the roster, you know, and the talent on that team. But I think the issue for Illinois is they're a team that can either, you know, win this game over Kentucky by 20-plus or they can lose to Kentucky by 30-plus. And, you know, I think that they're still in some cases, while they're still really hard to trust, kind of still trying to find their identity a little bit. One thing you have to give them credit for is these are two teams that, you know, rank amongst the top 10, top 11 in the country in terms of scoring. So I do anticipate some up and down transition basketball. Illinois is one of the better rebounding teams in the country as well. And so I think when you kind of looking at their roster, one name that I want people to kind of remember and keep your eyes and ears open for is Will Riley. We talked so much about some of those other guys in the other game between Edgecombe and Flag being phenomenal freshmen. But if there's a name, and I'm glad that we even mentioned something about Illinois in this case too, though, John, because when the Atlanta Hawks do eventually make their pick, probably somewhere down the you know, back half of the lottery or just outside of it, if there's a guy that not a lot of people know about and you want to be able to say who's an ideal piece that maybe the Atlanta Hawks could end up picking up, keep your eyes open for a guy named Will Riley, a true freshman. He is really, really good and definitely, you know, starting to raise some eyebrows for some of the scouts around the NBA.
Will Riley is good, and I do like him, but I think you've got a lot of guys that are like, well, I mean, I want Danny Wolf. I think he'll be available to the Hawks. If he's there, Danny Wolf's the center of Michigan, okay? He's like 7 foot, 260 pounds. I think that's the kind of guy that the Hawks need. But anyway, I'm not going to debate that. St. Mary's in Alabama at 6'10". Alabama has everything to win the national title. I mean, and what you want in a tournament. Good team, good coach, peaking, playing really good basketball, despite that I know they didn't make the SEC title game. But they have the guy. I mean, Sears is the kind of guy, you know this, you can ride one guy, and Sears is the one guy they can ride here. I know St. Mary's is a good club, but boy, I really like Alabama in this game. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, liking them for good reason. We talked a lot about teams before that, you know, like to score the basketball and high-octane offense and things of that nature. That is Alabama. Not only that, they, you know, rebound the basketball really well for their ball club. Sometimes a concerning thing for me about Alabama is they do go through these stints where, you know, they just make it really difficult on themselves to be able to get stops. If you're a team that is so primarily focused and based on having just more teams than the other, I mean, more points than the other team at the end of the game, which I get it, that is the name of the game, and how to win a basketball game. But it can't just be all about scoring. At some point, you're going to have to go out there and get stops. They're not really the most defensively disciplined type of team. We know that they like to shoot a lot of threes and shoot from the perimeter. They have a lot of talent over there, and that's what ultimately gets them a lot of their wins to be able to pass through. But if they find a way to meet up with somebody whose offensive and defensive balance is just more or just better than Alabama's is, that's kind of concerning. Nate Oates will tell you in that first game, and I remember seeing it here in Cleveland, one of the players from Robert Morris ended up with 25 points and 9 rebounds and 6 of those 9 being on the offensive end. And Alabama, who had four front court players that didn't have a single rebound. If they play a similar way, replicate and duplicate the way that they played the just two nights ago, Alabama's not going to be advancing to the next round. St. Mary's is a great rebounding team, no question. Got a lot of size up front, a little bit on the softer side to me, and not as much physicality. But Jordan Ross is definitely going to be the guy to lead the way if they find a way to beat Alabama today. I like Alabama to advance on.
All right, the night games here, Colorado State, Maryland. Maryland's got all the ingredients. They haven't quite put it, maybe they're just not putting it all together to be a national champion. Nick Clifford, if you haven't watched Colorado State, Colorado State's good because, well, Clifford is, he's kind of a machine. He's kind of an undersized wing, but boy, he gets inside and battles. I've watched him play a few times, me being a San Diego State guy. The thing I think that the Colorado State leans at, they're a veteran team. And Nate Clifford might be 24. I mean, they're sort of like one of the older teams in the. So what do you make of the Rams and the Turtles today?
Yeah, they are, and it's not just Clifford. I mean, you got, you know, a senior led group. Obviously, Jalen Lake is another one of those guys, and you know, Tyon Evans has been really good and stepped up in some very big moments for them. He's only a sophomore out of Kansas City, but, you know, I will say this much. Maryland is the best team in the country in terms of scoring amongst, you know, the starting five. The problem is that once you get outside of that starting five, the next guy coming out doesn't – I think the sixth man coming off the bench scores like 4 points, and everyone after him is underneath that margin. So, you know, it's really about being very disciplined. Also about just making sure that you're not, you know, in foul trouble, because that's not something I think they can afford. In some cases, I think that hopefully this isn't a situation where some of the recent comments or events about some off-the-court things between the AD and the head coach, Kevin Willard, is not going to overflow into these games where the guys
are. Yeah, there's that. Yeah, there's a lot of there's some drama coming out of College Park. Yeah, there is.
There's a lot of conversation.
Yeah, right. We'll see how that affects it. Ole Miss and Iowa State, two well-coached teams that nobody wants to see, and they just don't want to see them right now because the winner of this game is going to be on a heater. How do you like this?
Yeah, I like Ole Miss in this game. Iowa State sometimes between injuries and having some struggles to score in some very critical moments, possessions down the stretch. But Ole Miss, I think Jalen Breakfield is the X factor for Ole Miss on today and even for this team for the remainder of this tournament. We know, if not anything else, that Chris Beard can lead a team, know what it takes to get to a Final Four and even to a national championship game. Their hands will be full, but I do like Ole Miss to win this game. However, it will be really tough.
You know, I'm the amazing stat of the Big Ten up the road for me. I was in Indianapolis at the Hoosier Dome to watch Mateen Cleaves and Michigan State win the national title, beat Teddy DePay and Miller. 25 years ago, the last time, 25th anniversary, last time the Big Ten won a national title, almost amazing to me. Tom Izzo against New Mexico tonight. What do you expect out of your Spartans in this game?
A much tougher game than most people may think. If you didn't see this guy, Donovan Dent, the other day against Marquette and Cam Jones, he is the real deal. He is the prototypical type of point guard. He's very fluid, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I know he had six turnovers the other day against Marquette, but that is a rarity. And Michigan State's going to have their hands full with him and maybe even a couple other guys between True Washington, who is kind of like a glue guy for them, and an outside shooter like Nolan. Michigan State, I think, is probably a little bit too much because they do have the depth. Tom Izzo brings about five guys off the bench to be able to get contributing minutes, so it feels like a never-ending revolving door of role players that once that horn sounds, just kind of checking into the game, what have you. If Michigan State's not hitting their threes and the crowd is getting behind New Mexico State, Michigan State can have some problems. I anticipate that they will, but I anticipate that they win.
All right, I got about 60 seconds. Oregon and Arizona, final game of tonight, and then we'll have the Sweet 16 set. I got to tell you, I think the winner of this team, some fans aren't paying attention. The winner of this game is, to me, a potential legit Final Four threat.
Yeah, and a threat to Duke in the event that what we expect to happen would be Duke winning. I mean, one somebody who you don't want to play against in the month of March. Let's just tell it what it, call it how it is. That's Dana Altman. He's always going to have his guys ready to go. He's going to propose a problem up front for anybody for Arizona because they have Nate Biddle in the middle, who's also a McDonald's All-American and one of the best coming out of high school at that time. So much is going to rely, as it has been all year long and even since he touched foot on campus in Tucson, is going to be Caleb Love. He's either going to shoot him into this game and into a win into the next round, or he's going to end up shooting them out of this game. I do like Arizona to advance and set up a matchup that we saw earlier this year in Tucson between Duke and Arizona in a really, really close game.
Where can the fans find you, Deshaun?
At Tate's Take Hoops, TateStakeHoops. We call it where basketball lives.
As always, Deshaun, I'll talk to you next weekend, and I do appreciate your getting up on a Sunday morning and walking me through it. Enjoy the games today.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I'm ready for some more March.